Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote, Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests on Blog Talk Radio as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Do you have adult children, adult kids? Do your adult kids have their own kids? So that makes those your grandkids. Are you really ready for summer vacation? It's coming soon, and all the kids are going to be getting out of school and coming home from college. Tell me, can you imagine doing a cruise with your entire family, all 17 of them? Well, that's what I'm going to be doing this summer for my 70th birthday. I need all the help and advice I can get. Do you know how to avoid vacation family stress? Well, I'm going to need to find out how to do that. And when was the last time you heard someone say, don't bite your tongue, or don't roll your eyes? Or better yet now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for? Now, are you ready to learn how to deal with adult kids and adult in-laws? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today I will be introducing you to my guest, who's been on my show many times. She is a success coach extraordinaire, and she will provide us with wonderful, informative, and inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice. I'm pleased to announce that our show now has over 1.3 million listeners to date. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. She is the author of Don't Roll Your Eyes, Making In-Laws into Family. She also wrote Don't Bite Your Tongue, How to Foster Rewarding Relationships with Your Adult Children. She's a frequent speaker on family dynamics. She is a resident scholar at Brandeis University Women's Studies Research Center. This expert holds a doctorate in administration, planning, and social policy from Harvard University, a master's in counseling from Columbia University, and a bachelor's in American Studies from Barnard College. Her papers are archived at the Schlesinger Library, Harvard University. She and her husband have four adult children and seven grandchildren. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the show Dr. Ruth Nemzoff. Hello, how are you today?
Fine, January, and I'm going to begin by making a correction in my resume.
Oh, okay.
As of Friday, I have eight grandchildren.
Wonderful. Oh, my gosh, how exciting.
It was very exciting. It is my eighth grandchild. She's a little girl. She is the second of my third child's children. And it's pretty exciting. She has a big brother who's not so big, but it's all very exciting. So I'm thrilled to make that correction.
Well, congratulations, and I've made a note because I know I'll be having you back on the show many times, and I want to stay current and up to date with you. You know, recently you just returned from a fabulous. We're talking about vacations today. You returned from a fabulous trip to China. Could you just give me a little overview of what that vacation was like for you?
Yes, I'll give you the overview in terms of me and my adult child, because I think that's
okay.
What this program is
about. I love
it. So I began, I arrived in China, and my daughter was working because she lives there. So I decided it was very important that I be independent, that I not bother her while she's working, because we all know when we're working, we are working, and we have things we have to do.
Absolutely.
So I took myself on the subway, and I toured around, and I had an absolutely marvelous time. I went to the museum by myself. I did things that I felt comfortable doing by myself. I walked around the neighborhood, and then in the evenings, I went out with her and with her husband, and we had an absolutely marvelous time. The next segment, my daughter was working and was taking me to the villages. She is one of the principals of Teach for China, which is a program somewhat an affiliate of Teach for America, somewhat loosely affiliated, but it's the same idea. But it has American and Chinese graduates of top universities working together teaching in villages. And again, my daughter was working, and she was graciously taking me around. So I realized that my job was to roll with the punches, to just whatever happened, I was there just as a privilege, as a guest, not as the center attraction. If my daughter asked me to do something, I did it. I did whatever I could to be helpful. And other than that, I tried to be a good guest. Then my daughter and I, as a dream come true, I had always wanted to go to Bhutan. I had lived a summer in Nepal in the early 60s before the hippies went there. My husband and I had been in Peace Corps. In India, and we had this summer in Nepal. And then we became a traveling team. So our relation changed already three times in that short period. And now we were a team, and we were making decisions together. So we would, you know, first of all, you have to go through one of the things the British have left is a bureaucracy. And it took us you know, quite a while to get through the airport and get our visa. And we just chatted up people in line and had a wonderful time. And then we went to the hotel and we decided together what we would do and in what order. And we just, sometimes we'd do what she wanted to do. Sometimes we'd do what I wanted to do. Sometimes we'd begin the day by saying, well, these are the things I would like to do. And she'd say, these are the things she'd like to do. And then we'd kind of look at a map and figure it out together and make sure that each of us got at least some of what we wanted to do. And that was very, very important to do. Now, she had, because she was living in Asia, she had booked the hotels, and so I just, whatever she booked was fine with me. I didn't try to second guess because, really, what difference does it make? My main agenda was to be with her, and I must say one of the great joys of this trip was landing in Kathmandu and remembering the freedom and the excitement and the adventure I had felt as a young 20-something being there in, in the 60s. And sharing that with my daughter was just an amazing experience.
What an amazing story. You know, you're good at sharing. I would like you, if you would please, share with my audience a little bit about your early success story, how you got into the Peace Corps and how you became an activist and such an independent woman from such a young age.
Well, I would say that I think I was born that way. I remember early on my parents would take us every Sunday on little excursions, you know, educational excursions, the Freedom Trail. I live in Boston, you know, to the State House. And I remember going to the State House and saying, there are no women there. I'm going to be a woman legislator. And later, as you know, I did become one. But I think I remember I was still wearing leggings, so I was pretty young when I did that. Because I remember I had torn them sliding down the hill that day. That was prepubescent time. And then, I was always good at school and was reinforced for being good at school. And I remember I ran for vice president of my eighth grade class, and girls only ran for secretary in those days. And I won. And that was the beginning. You know, first of all, it taught me about how do you win an election. And it really isn't very different from doing it at eighth grade or doing it in a political campaign. That you rally people to help you, and then you ask for their vote, and you try to have some good ideas about what you would do. And then I went to Barnard College, and Barnard College very definitely felt that women could have both a career and a family.
Yeah.
And so I became a teacher, and I went home, and actually I followed a pattern which is quite common this age, which is I went home and saved money to go to graduate school. And I saved every penny, and then I went to graduate school. And
now this
I had
was
enough,
this was before you met the man of your dreams. This is before
correct.
You were married. You did all of this. You know, we're going to take a break right now and hear about your host today. And when we come back with Dr. Ruth Nemzoff, she's going to share with us a little more of her success story, her journey. We'll be right back.
Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shall Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor, with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Whine at Amazon.com.
Welcome back with my wonderful guests, Dr. Ruth Nemzoff, who is fearless, in my opinion, because off you go by yourself to China. I assume you do not speak Chinese, do you?
No, I don't. But, but I can read sign language, and I find people very lovely and willing to communicate. Uh-huh. When I say sign language, I'm literally pointing at signs.
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking about American Sign Language with the fingers.
I can do that. Yeah. Okay, now you're at Barnard College, saving all your money to go to graduate school. What did you want to study in graduate school?
Well, in those days, women could be a nurse or a teacher or a social worker, and I wanted to be a teacher. And I did teach for 2 years and enjoyed it immensely, and that is, I met my husband. We immediately started talking about going in the Peace Corps. He was the Peace Corps doctor. I got myself a job as a teacher. I enjoyed it immensely. And then I became a guidance counselor. I was able to use my master's degree as a guidance counselor. And I also enjoyed that. But then I had children.
Let's backtrack a little bit. I want to hear a little bit more about where you went in the Peace Corps, what year and how long you were there. And did you get to go with your husband?
Yes, we went together, 65 to 67. We lived in India, got to travel all over India.
It
was pretty wonderful, pretty wonderful.
How amazing.
And I think that experience really taught me that there are many ways to do things. And that was a really important lesson, because when I had children and was finding it very hard working full time, I decided I would try to use my skills in another venue, because I could see I wasn't cut out full-time housewifery.
Uh-huh,
and
okay.
I did manage to find a job. It was a job share with
mm-hmm.
a woman who had children much older than my children. So they
okay.
were in high school. Mine
uh-huh.
were babies. And we set up Goodwill Industries Job Placement Service. And that was very rewarding to be able
uh-huh.
to do that. And that service still continues to today. We worked with the city council and really was a big success.
Uh-huh.
And part of the success was that during school vacations, I would work full time because she needed to be home with her children, and I got extra babysitters because the
uh-huh.
high school kids were free.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she, when I was on maternity leave, she would cover for me. So I recommend job sharing if you can possibly do it. The company really gets a bargain. They get two heads for the price of one.
Yeah.
And we managed to work well together. We solved our own problems. We didn't bring those to the boss. We just worked them out. And I would recommend that.
So you went and you got your master's in counseling from Columbia.
Correct.
You already had a bachelor's in American Studies. And
right.
then you went on to do administration, planning, and social policy from Harvard University. How did your husband feel about all this schoolwork that you were doing?
Well, actually, I had moved to New Hampshire because he was he had a job up there. And I always
uh-huh.
say I read my Bible wrong. Ruth didn't follow her husband. She followed her mother-in-law. But that's another
uh-huh.
story. But I did follow him to New Hampshire. And
uh-huh.
there I had the opportunity. I was asked to run for the legislature.
Oh, my gosh.
And,
wow.
And I was asked in part because there I had started programs for persons with disabilities. This was before the laws were passed, but we could
mm-hmm.
see that this was going to be the future. And I worked at a school for kids with retardation, and I just have wonderful stories of children, putting their siblings through college with their work as a kitchen help or janitor or whatever they did. And, one guy bought a truck for his family. I mean, it was just the most moving thing. It was just such a rewarding job. And
mm-hmm.
then in addition, I was asked to run for the legislature. I had helped start the women's movement in southern New Hampshire, and that was
uh-huh.
very rewarding. And we started a counseling service at a nursery school. So I ran for the legislature and was elected. But
okay.
at the same time, I applied to graduate school and
uh-huh.
got accepted. So there I was with these two absolutely fabulous opportunities.
Yeah. So how did you do this one? How did you pull this off?
Well, and of course, I discovered I was pregnant. I would say... I put on my superwoman cape and it got very tattered and torn. It was really hard.
Uh-huh.
I left Harvard with a file folder about 3 inches thick asking for various exceptions because
uh-huh.
I was a legislator
okay.
and was granted those.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I managed to do it. I will give my husband credit for... also helping
uh-huh,
because
yeah.
it has to be a team effort.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we see that now all the time with young couples. You know, when you and I were growing or having our families, it was on a lot of women didn't do what you did. It was pretty much unheard of for you to be such a activist. I admire you so much. I know most of us were sitting on the sidelines, and you just plunged right in, and you had to have a cooperative husband. How did your children feel about your career?
Well, I think all children are, or many children are incredibly proud and incredibly ambivalent.
yeah, okay, good.
Because, I did spend a lot of time, I was fortunate that I was able to hire help because
mm-hmm,
I think it
mm-hmm.
would have been very difficult to do without some assistance. And I was also fortunate that I lived near both my parents and my in-laws, relatively close. And
okay,
they certainly picked up the pieces. And that's why I feel so strongly about families, that we are a resource. We are, if we can access that resource, it can be incredibly helpful to us.
Oh, yeah.
But that involves forgiving them for whatever sins they have done to you, whether real or imagined. And it also mm-hmm. involves allowing the parents and the grandparents on both sides mm-hmm. to do things their way sometimes, not necessarily my own way. And I think uh-huh. my children benefited from that because these people have some good ideas too.
Oh, absolutely. Now, okay, your writing career, are these, let's do a plug right now for both your books and tell us what your website is and share with my listeners where they can buy your books.
So my books are Don't Bite Your Tongue, How to Foster Rewarding Relationships with Your Adult Children, and it can be gotten at my website, RuthNemzoff.com. That's Ruth, N as in Nancy, E as in Egg, M as in Mary, Z as in Zebra, OFF as in French fries.com, or don'tbiteyourtongue.com with no spaces or apostrophes. And it can also be on any of the electronic booksellers,
right,
like Amazon or Powell's or whatever, and bookstores, and it's available on Kindle. The other book that I wrote as a result of the wonderful 300-venue book tour I had with my first book is called Don't Roll Your Eyes, Making In-Laws into Family, and that book also can be gotten at RuthNemzoff.com or on any of the electronic websites. And you can also go to your local bookseller and ask them to order it. And it's also available on Kindle.
Okay, so now when did the writing career begin? Because you're going to graduate school, get master's, or doctorate, and then you become a legislator, a politician. When did you find time to write?
Well, I did it serially. I did not do it simultaneously. After being a legislator, I then moved to Boston, and I eventually became a professor at Bentley University. And then I lost my job because, you know, in every career there are some bad moments. And in mine, my whole department was cut. It was not a personal thing. The whole department was cut in the downturn. Okay. And lo and behold, I started writing, and I managed to get a book contract with Palgrave Macmillan, a very good publisher, and that's when my writing career began at age 66.
Okay. You really are my idol. That is fabulous, to start a writing career at 66. I started at 50. And, you know, so many women feel that you're too old. And guess what? You're never too old. You can always start something new. Don't you agree, Dr. Ruth Nemzoff?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And I meet people as I go about talking around the country and around the world who they'll even be in their 70s or 80s getting a doctorate or starting a new not-for-profit or beginning a new hobby. It is extraordinary what people are doing. This is the time to fulfill the dreams that we've held at bay, taking care of others. Now it's our time. And, you know, many of us, even in our 70s, may have 20 more years to live. That's a long time.
I know. It's an amazing time to be alive. We are so fortunate. I feel so blessed to have all these opportunities. I'm starting this career in radio, and I'm just turning 70, and I agree with you. I feel like I could do this for another 20 years easily.
Absolutely, and maybe you'll have another career after this one.
Yeah, could happen. Right now we're going to take a break, and we're going to hear from one of my sponsors. And when we come back, I want, Dr. Ruth, I want you to share a little bit more with my listeners about some of the difficult things that people have to go through, like losing jobs, death, divorce, the things that happens in families. We'll be right back with Dr. Ruth Nemzoff.
Are you a fitness professional, a trainer, or a coach? Would you like consistent and timely updates on your team's performance? We have a completely customizable app that can give you real-time information via the internet or your handheld phone. Track the performance of your client's progress with their physical fitness regimen. Track team members' performance or schedule a workout session. Meet up at the gym, on the bike trail, or wherever your physical activities take you. The app is called Socially Fit, or SoFit, and can be found on the iTunes Store. Look for the blue Socially Fit icon. When combined with data analysis capabilities, You not only feel the effects of your fitness routine, you also see the graphical progress of your results. The app makes the complex simple, so that more of your time is spent sculpting your physique with less time tracking your results with old-fashioned pen and paper. Download it today to begin a new year with data to show your progress in meeting your goals. Are you socially fit?
Well, January Jones is getting socially fit this year, and I hope all of you listening will join me. Dr. Ruth Nemtsov, let's talk a little bit about the difficult things that happen. And, you know, anyone who is successful has stories to share, things they've had to overcome. It's always difficult, isn't it?
It is always difficult. I think life is much harder than we expect. I think one has to work very, very hard to be successful. And I think one has to really constantly stretch oneself, be willing to learn, be willing to take risks, be willing to fail. And all of those things are incredibly important. And I would also say I think it helps if you surround yourself with a supportive system. And hopefully you can get that with friends and with family. And by that, I mean getting people to help you out. And, of course, you will need to reciprocate that helping out. But part of having a successful career is having people around you who will help in times of crisis. And every life has crisis, whether it's a broken foot or a broken ankle or a stubbed finger. Or something more major. And that support is also necessary in work because all of us have talents and deficits. And we need to surround ourselves with people who can help us fill in the deficits, and hopefully we can help them fill in the deficits.
Yeah, it's definitely a two-way street. And you can't get to 70 years the way you and I have without having lots and lots of up and downs. Failure is an opportunity to grow, and so many young people get discouraged. And that's why I love sharing stories with them about people who are successful. One man recently told me that he had 60 rejections for his book before he got his book published. And that's the part, that's what real life is all about, isn't it?
Right, yes. My book, it took me 4 years to find a publisher. I had many rejections. It definitely takes a lot of rejection. I mean, running for office, not everyone loves you. Many people tell you really terrible things. They say, you're a really horrible person because you don't believe what I believe. You have to be secure that's you might be a terrible person, but that's not the reason why.
I gotcha. I read you loud and clear. Well, you know, to do politics, you have to really be tough, and you have to have a tough skin, don't you?
Yes, but you also have, hopefully, are also incredibly compassionate, and because you get a chance to knock on the lives of people. And when you hear what people need, hopefully you take action. And so I think it's a combination of accepting rejection and at the same time realizing you have been granted a privilege, and using that privilege to help others, I think, is incredibly important, and it's what at least kept me going.
It's an amazing time to be a woman, don't you? I mean, when I look back on when we grew up, you were a teacher, you were a nurse. Those were your options. That, you know, girls didn't even think big. And now here we are in a country eagerly anticipating our first woman president. I hope I live long enough to see that, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think there are tremendous opportunities. I think, though, we have not solved the problem of both child care and working. I would love to see flexibility in the workplace so that people perhaps could enter at a later age and yet with recognition of all the experience they've gained as a parent, as a community member, as a friend, as a worker, co-worker, whether paid or unpaid, because mm-hmm. it is very different entering the workforce after you've had that experience than when you've never had that experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think now more and more women have to work. It's just, it's become a reality. It's a fact of life. It's very few families where the mothers and fathers aren't working. So there is child care is an issue. It's going to become a bigger and bigger issue, and it definitely has to be dealt with in a compassionate way.
Right, and I would like to see more job shares. I would like to see more job shares both at home and at work, because it is incredibly difficult now.
Mm-hmm. Well, job share just makes so much sense because everyone – it's a win-win-win because you get to work, you get to be with your children, and you don't have them with strangers. You know, I don't hear that many people, I don't know that many people that do job share. Is this something that needs more publicity and be brought more into the forefront?
Well, it's been talked about for years, but for some reason it has not caught on, and I don't quite know why. It does require some negotiating and perhaps that feels difficult to people. I don't know.
Mm, wow. Well, now let's get on and talk a little bit about your tackling the situation that we all have with our adult children and our adult in-laws and our grandchildren. What inspired you to write these fabulous books?
Well, because I think I've mentioned before that my first child married, everyone said, let me give you some advice, keep your mouth shut and your pocketbook open, and I thought that was terrible advice. And see families coming together, particularly around holidays, around vacations, and that if everyone makes it clear what the expectations and needs are, the vacation goes so much smoother.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to do some work during that vacation period, you have to do some things on the computer. You have to accept a phone call. Whatever you have to do, if you can make it clear in advance that you will need to do that, it is much better than just the family feeling like, oh, you're running out on them, you don't like us. Mm-hmm. So that's incredibly important. I think discussing how who wants to be with the grandchildren? In other words, in the old days, parents might have come home and expected the grandparents to take care of the children. Nowadays, the parents, because they're both working, may want to spend time with their children. And the grandparents may think, oh, I'm so disappointed. Or they may be thrilled that they're not called upon. But making clear, you know, maybe the parents want to go out one night, or maybe the four adults want to go out one night. Whatever the particular family would like, just kind of talk about it in advance to make it clear. And also make clear what are the rules of the game. For example, you're going on a cruise, you said?
Oh, I'm going to need lots of advice here.
Right. Do you expect to have all three meals a day with the kids? Or will everyone do their own thing? You'll kind of do catch-as-catch-can for breakfast. Maybe three of you will meet. Maybe 17 of you will meet. But supper, maybe you'll all meet. I don't know. You will have to decide.
I was kind of hoping that we would all be able to have one meal together, and that would be dinner each night, and then everyone and do your own thing the rest of the time.
Then you need to make that clear to your kids that we're thrilled, we're going on this for my birthday, but what would really be meaningful to me is supper together every night.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great time during the day, but supper together every night. And that would be wonderful if you could make that clear. And maybe one of your children will say, yeah, but, you know, Joey's only 2 years old. That would be kind of hard for us. Can we come for dessert? Because we'll be putting Joey to bed.
Right, right. So there's always there's always a lot of room for compromise, especially with a large group. And you've got, you know, the interesting thing about this is we've got all age groups. You know?
Yes.
We're starting with a 18-month-old, and we're going all the way up to 75. And every age in between, every personality, I think it's going to be a wonderful experience. We have done this before with our children, and we have taken them on cruises, and we found it was probably our most successful vacations, just because everyone could do their own thing.
Yes, and it is wonderful that there's something for everybody there.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is you can keep changing groups. So one day maybe you're doing playing rolly ball with the 18-month-old, and the next day you're going around or wherever the city is that you've stopped at with your older children. So it's kind of nice that you get to sort of keep changing groups, and the cousins get to change groups, and it becomes a great deal of fun.
Oh, yeah. I think it'll be a wonderful, memorable birthday year for me. And I think it's what I think the greatest gift you can give your grandchildren is to attempt to grow old gracefully and share a little bit about your life with them so they remember you and know who you are. I know I grew up and knew, I saw both of my grandmothers every day of my life till I was 12.
Right.
And what a wonderful gift that is.
Right, and you had that opportunity to be with them and tell stories about your childhood while you're on that boat. But, you know, a lot of families will, you know, in your case, you're not negotiating. Who's cleaning up after dinner because you're on a ship and there are people there to do it?
Yeah.
But many families vacationing together really need to talk in advance. Maybe in some families, a different person cooks each night. And a different person cleans up each night. But talk about that in advance, because anybody who does it all the time often feels resentful. I know in my own case, my husband and I tend to do the dishes at night. We don't do the cooking, but we tend to do the dishes because everybody's putting the babies to bed. And that that feels good to us, to be able to help in that way. But
you know, we're gonna take a break right now, Dr. Ruth Nemtsov, and I want to share an organization that I support. And when we come back, I want to talk a little more about your fantastic, successful books. I'd like to see if you could share what success means to you, a little advice for my listeners, and perhaps tell us if you have any regrets. We'll be right back with Dr. Ruth Nemtsov.
What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play, and well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back with the wonderful Dr. Ruth Nemtsov. You know, this has been such a delight being able to share you with my listeners, to hear about your fabulous, fascinating life, all of your adventures in the Peace Corps, the legislature, then becoming writing your first book at 66. What an amazing journey you've had. When you look back on it, do you have any regrets or things you would do differently?
Well, I don't know if I'd do it differently. Obviously, there's always the road not taken. you know, should I have stayed in politics? Should I have written earlier, whatever? But I do like the road I took. And I would say that I think it's not so much what life gives us, but what we do with what life gives us that matters. So I would say I feel very, very lucky and very, very sated having, you know, four wonderful kids, fabulous in-law children, Wow, eight grandchildren. I am very happy on the home front, a wonderful husband, very happy on the home front and happy on the professional front and happy on the community front, because I also think it's important to have a volunteer life too.
Okay. Now, I think one of the big things is to have something to look forward to in life. Instead of looking back with regrets, looking forward. Do you have any things upcoming that you'd like to share with us? Some new things that you're considering doing?
Yes. Well, you know, I've spoken at the National Convention of AARP, and I've spoken at the Harvard University Psychiatry Department.
Oh,
I've spoken to here and there and around the world, and I think I'd like to speak to more and more groups. I really enjoy having people talk with each other to give each other ideas on how to negotiate relationships. I think it's a really powerful tool, and so I think I'd like to do more public speaking, and that would be one possible career I would have.
Okay.
So
that would be fun. You know, I had the opportunity to be a cruise ship speaker a few years back, and that was an exciting thing to do. I enjoyed doing it, but, you know, I've been there, done that. I really don't really want to do that again, but it is fun to communicate with people, and especially fun, I think, to meet young people, and to share your journey with them. It's fun when you get older and you're able to do that, isn't it?
Right. Yes, and I've loved speaking at Freshman Parents Weekend. It's one of my favorite times to speak. I've spoken at Tufts and Northeastern and several other schools, and just really enjoyed it because I think both the parents and the kids are wondering, how do we renegotiate these relationships now that we're becoming adults and now that the children are becoming adults? So that's been a very exciting aspect of my career.
Now, when you look back at everything you've done, well, obviously, your fabulous marriage and your wonderful children and grandchildren are right up at the top of the list, I'm sure, just like